So today I want to talk about how we can practice not only on the cushion, but especially in our daily lives. And when I started practicing, that was not much on my radar. I think that probably teachers said something like, oh, you can practice in daily life, but I never really registered that, and it took me a while. It was only when I was practicing in Myanmar with a teacher called Sayada Utejania that I really started to get into that practice. And he is a Burmese monk, and he is very much kind of about integrating the practice into daily life and not just leave it on the cushion, but to use it for your own good and others' good. He says, for example, retreat is not the only place for us to train our minds. Training at home, the results and the benefits become much more real. It takes a real practice to deal with real situations. And so that's also quite, you know, important, because in our daily lives, we're dealing with real situations. And on the cushion, like, maybe some of you have more of a breath-based practice where you follow the breath all the time, and you're not like tuning into other sensations or experiences. And then in that way, it's really nice because you're calming the mind down, you're calming yourself, and there's a calmness arising. But then you step off your cushion and you go into your daily life, and boom, the whole world is there again. And you have to deal with that, right? So he says it takes real practice to deal with real situations. So when we integrate our practice into daily life, we can start to deal with these real situations. And so what does that mean to practice in daily life? So it's basically the same as that we just did, but then we expand it to include that our mindfulness can include anything, everything. So when we were meditating, you were aware of your body, you noticed the breath in the sitting, you noticed the feet in the walking. And then during the sit, I also invited you to experience other sensations, to notice thoughts arising, to notice feelings, to notice sounds, other body sensations. And so you can try it out right now if you are, like, if you just know what's, you know, your body is right now, how your body is right now, that's it. You know, that's the practice. You know that you're sitting, you know, maybe you feel your feet on the floor, or you feel your sit bones on the cushion or the chair. Or perhaps you notice that you're seeing right now, your eyes are open, which is usually not the case in meditation. And so you can, that's a nice thing in daily life. You can practice with seeing as well. Like, that's an extra sense door that's right there for you. I once heard the teacher Alexis Santos say, like, if you include seeing in your practice, then there's a lot of moments during your life that you can be aware. So it's kind of, yeah, it's actually really simple. Be aware of whatever is happening in each moment. And awareness and mindfulness, I use those two terms interchangeably. And so when you're, for example, when you're getting up at the end of this evening, and you're walking to your car or to your house or to your bike or however you got here, notice that, you know, the body's moving, that there's walking. Maybe when you go outside, you feel the heat right away, since it's so warm right now. When you are doing the dishes, you might notice the smell of the soap. You might notice how the hands are in the water, how the water is flowing around the hands, or the sounds of the dishes clinging. You might notice these responses in the mind that I talked about when we were sitting. For example, the smell of soap might be pleasant. This smells good, nice and fresh. Or perhaps you feel aversion coming up for having to do the dishes or something, you know? So you can notice these reactions to whatever is happening in your daily life. And that that can be really simple and easy to see. There can be lots of deeper stuff going on. Sometimes we get triggered by someone and something deep is getting activated, and sometimes it's just very simple and it's just kind of plain and seems even boring. Yeah, there's a lot of variety of how you can practice, and like I just invited you to be mindful of your feet and your sit bones, but try to keep that doing that during this talk, being mindful of whatever is obvious in the moment. And so there's no right or wrong of what you're mindful of. It's just whatever is naturally kind of grabbing your attention, basically. You can be mindful of that. And so that can be right now the words. And often when someone is giving a talk and I'm listening, like my mind is chattering, like commenting on it and like thinking, oh, this is great or this is not great, or, you know, all these little comments that are happening, little judgments, little like liking, disliking, all these little things that happen all the time in our minds. And then there's lots of stuff happening in the body in each moment. And so, Sayadaw, my teacher, he mentions that you can practice this from the moment you wake up in the morning till the moment you go to bed. And if you take a nap, then you might wake up again and go to bed again. But it's very important to keep this relaxed, that there's a relaxed awareness. There's not like a lot of strain happening. Like, oh, I need to be in like this kind of focusing, straining thing, that you don't need to need to strain for this. So it's basically kind of letting experience just arise and then noticing it. And if you don't notice it, it's okay. You know, there might be, if you like this practice, if you want to engage with this practice, then there might be an intention of like, oh, I'd like to be mindful of, you know, moment-to-moment experience. But then for all of us, it will be like gone for minutes, hours, days. and then at some point we realize, oh wait, I was supposed to be mindful. I was at the intention to be mindful. So no need to strain or effort, just an intention to be mindful is what's useful. Sayadaw, another quote from Sayadaw: people usually try to balance relaxation and effort by using more or less effort. But if the mind is interested in learning something, effort is already present. So the proper balance to find is between relaxation and interest. So it's not about effort, it's about relaxation and interest, being interested in your experience from this place of relaxed attention, perhaps even a receiving attitude. I really like that word, like receiving what's already here. And so it's completely okay to lose mindfulness if you try this practice, that even if it's for days. Really, you can see it as a training. Like if you go to the gym, you're also not expecting to be looking like a bodybuilder within, you know, the next couple months, you know. So take it easy on yourself. It's really okay if it doesn't work right away, or if it's hard, or if it's you don't remember at all. And also in the beginning phase of this, or even for a long time, however long you want, you can use like little reminders. There are apps where you can let a bell ring every once in a while. You can set an interval for that. I know from students that the Plum Village app has that capacity. I don't work with any of those apps, so I have no idea what other apps would work with that. But and then another way, more old-fashioned, is to have post-it notes all over your house, like be aware or be mindful. That's actually in the monastery where I was with Sayadaw. Above the door handles, there was a little sign with something like be aware. So every time you would open the door, there would be, oh yeah, the reminder of being aware. And so you can have something like that in your house, every door you go through, be aware. And so part of daily life practice, so if you start to become more and more aware and practicing with this, then there might be a natural kind of like inclination or wish to experience a bit more stillness perhaps in your life. And often we're so busy and running from one thing to the next, and if you do this practice, then there might be moments that you feel like you might deliberately want to create some stillness or cultivate some stillness. Taking mindful breaks, like instead of, if you have a moment to spare, instead of scrolling on your phone, that you just kind of sit there and be mindful. Or you're mindfully drinking a cup of coffee or tea. Like if you're out and about and you need to wait in line somewhere, that you actually just stand or sit there, wherever way the line is formed, that you just are there and sit for a moment before grabbing. Maybe if you sit at the DMV, you might wait for hours, so you might want to at some point grab your phone. But if it's like a shorter thing, maybe just not grab your phone. I've also practiced with that in public transport, like just sitting in a train and not do anything, just kind of mindfully look out the window, just like that, instead of going on my phone right away. And then I'm noticing I'm the only one in the train that is not doing anything on my phone or computer. Also, there's this practice that Gil Fronsdal, as a teacher over in California, offers, and he calls it the three-breath journey. And so taking three breaths mindfully, not doing anything else in the moment, just three breaths mindfully. It's really can make a difference. Also, like, I think the fact of the paying attention to the breath can help to settle the nervous system a little bit. So especially if you, normally we don't change our breath when we do Vipassana, but if you do a three breath journey, you might want to have your exhale be a little longer than your inhale. And that will calm your nervous system down. So it can be a really relaxing kind of little thing, this three breath journey, to incorporate in your daily life. And what I also like is what I call single tasking instead of multitasking. You know, when you're cooking, not listen to something. When you're going out for a walk, you know, leave your phone and your AirPods down at home. You know, just like that, just easy ways of making a daily thing that you're doing anyways more mindful. Being mindful of going on a walk is so different than when you're listening to some podcast or music or whatever it is. Because you actually start to experience, you know, the air on your skin, and you start to experience the temperature, and here in Richmond, the humidity. And you start to experience you know, just the birds and maybe a land mower somewhere, or, you know, whatever it is, the sights of, you know, maybe if you're going through your neighborhood yards, people's yards look like, or the flowers or the trees or whatever it is, you know, all these different things that we can be mindful of, the body walking. And so when you are aware of walking, whether it's on a walk or on a run, or whether it's from your couch to the fridge, you know, all these little moments that are basically on our feet, we can be mindful of the whole body just moving, or of whatever is present for us. So it doesn't have to look a certain way, just like we did in the walking. Now it looked a certain way. We were walking really slowly and feeling the feet. When we're doing that in our daily lives, we're not going to slow down as much. We're not going to be like snail pace. We're going to walk our normal pace and just notice whatever is happening in that moment. And so why would you do this? Besides that, it might sound appealing for some already, but one of the things is that it gives a bit more ease and stillness if you engage with this practice. Like when I'm noticing I'm single tasking, just doing dishes or just folding laundry or just on a walk, that sometimes there's just a natural stillness arises, or a natural ease, and there's this monk and scholar Bhikkhu Anālayo who mentions that there's this subtle joy of being in the present moment. And it's not always available, but sometimes it is. When I'm single tasking, I feel really this joy of just being in the present moment, doing this one thing. So that can be kind of a reward in itself already, just this presence. And then also, this practice contributes to wisdom. And I will explain that. Because in daily life, there are these patterns and conditionings that we get to see when we are practicing this practice. And so we all have patterns and conditionings from, you know, our life. Some are helpful and supportive. You know, maybe there's just a natural kindness towards your neighbors or towards your housemates. And there are also patterns and conditionings that are not so helpful, sometimes unwholesome. And the unwholesome ones are rooted in the three unwholesome roots of existence, as they're called in Buddhism. The three are, the first is greed or craving. The Pali words are lobha or tanha. The second one is aversion or dosa. And the third is delusion or moha. And so these three, these English words don't really capture the meaning of those Pali words that I just mentioned. The Pali is the language in which some of the Buddhist scriptures were written down in. And so the lobha or tanha, the word is different in different contexts in the Pali scriptures, means anything from like the mildest little bit of wanting to intense attachment. Dosa means everything from the mildest irritation to intense hate. And moha is confusion or delusion, not knowing and not seeing clearly. And so all of our unwholesome states come from these three unwholesome roots, according to the Buddhist philosophy. And so being mindful of these unwholesome roots, of unwholesome mind states in general, whatever flavor they take, can be anger, can be frustration, can be sadness, can be anxiety, can be irritation, whatever it is. We get to see those three unwholesome roots when we pay attention to our daily life. Yeah, like we see the little bit of aversion coming up, oh, I have to do the dishes again. Or perhaps when you step outside, the aversion to the heat. Hopefully it's maybe a little less now the sun's down. Or maybe you notice that there is like a more of a neutral kind of feeling of when you step outside, like, oh, it's just okay. And that happens too, of course. So there's also wholesomeness arising. But to focus a little bit on those unwholesome roots, every time that we see any of that, or actually also the wholesome roots, but any time we see things in our experience, when we are mindful of whatever it is, even the most boring moments of our lives, there is wisdom in the background. The wisdom aspect of the mind is gathering these data points. So that's also one of Sayadaw's Uttesaniya's teachings, that that every moment of mindfulness is a data point, so to speak. And then over time, there are all these data points being collected, and wisdom, the wisdom aspect of the mind, so it's not us, we don't need to do any of this, it's just wisdom doing this in the background, we'll collect those data points and we'll kind of, I see it in my mind's eye, I see like this web of all these data points being connected, and then wisdom at some point seeing like, oh wow, it's like that, or seeing some truth or some insight arises around something. And so that's what can happen when we practice in daily life, moment to moment. And if we only practice on our cushion, it will also, some insights will arise at some point, but we're kind of giving our practice a huge boost if we bring it into everyday life. And so a simple example of a while ago, I was in a in a cabin in the mountains, and the weather was actually really nice out. It was not hot, and so we had the door open to get like a little bit of a cross breeze going through the cabin. But then there was where these Canadian wildfire smoke came down this way, and so the cabin started to fill with smoke, and my partner's kind of not good with smoke, so we had to close up the cabin. And I'm kind of outdoorsy person. I really like the fresh air and, you know, having the doors open and everything, and so I was kind of a little bit disappointed. Like, oh no, we're here, we're in nature, like, and now we have to close up. And so I was seeing the disappointment, like, yeah. And then wisdom kind of saw, like, oh, but, you know, it actually kind of in vain to feel disappointed, because it's not going to change. The smoke's there, and, you know, it's not good for my wife's lungs. So, you know, it's better that she's healthy than that I'm, you know, having it my way. And so it sounds like a rationalization, but it was more like wisdom kind of seeing that, and then the disappointment let go, because it was seen that it was, oh, actually, it's not, you know, useful, so to speak. And so wisdom can see that. Like, if we are rationalizing this in our mind, like I just kind of gave you a rationalization, but then it usually doesn't work. Sometimes it does, so we can try, but it usually doesn't, so the disappointment might still kind of linger. And so you can experiment with that to see, like, maybe wisdom will arise in certain situations once data points have been collected over and over again. And sometimes it doesn't, and you just need to kind of sit through it. Let it just move through you on its own pace, basically. And then still, if you do that, all those moments that you're mindful of, whatever it is, that's disappointment or whatever it is for you, are useful moments, because wisdom is collecting those data points. And so throughout the day, you might notice countless ways that a little bit of craving or a little bit of aversion arises. And usually, like, what's behind it is there's some version of wanting things to be different than they are. And so as soon as we start to feel some of the unwholesomeness, you can check in, is there anything I want to be different than it is? Like, for me, it was I wanted the doors open, and I didn't want the smoke to be there. And so just seeing that, oh wait, I want something to be different than it is again. Well, that's kind of in vain, because things are as they are. So it's really not, you know, so helpful in a way. And so Sayadaw says, knowing the nature of the three unwholesome roots, craving, aversion, and delusion, is really all you need in your ongoing pursuit of wisdom. And so it's a really important point to start to see these three unwholesome roots in your life. And so the expanded version, not just the English words. And then also he really encourages to not rush. He says that the learning process happens at its own pace. You can't rush it. So just maintain your interest, relax, and learn. Mm. So that's kind of the attitude to do all this with. Relax and learn, relax and learn. No need to rush. It will happen at its own pace. And so this Vipassana practice, this insight meditation practice, is really about letting everything arise, opening to everything, pleasant and unpleasant, difficult and wonderful. And that's what builds resilience in the end. And that's what offers this wisdom to arise. And then lastly, I just want to circle back to the wholesomeness, because also that's really important to notice wholesomeness. For example, kindness, compassion, equanimity, joy, patience, all these wholesome qualities that we all also have in us. Really important to start to notice this in your daily life as well. The moments that you're kind to someone or to yourself, moments that you're actually patient, the moments that you're okay with stuff. Like Sayada Otejiniya, my teacher, he calls it, this last one, the summary, is what he calls okayness with everything. And that then encompasses all the wholesome states. And then, of course, your regular practice, if you have a daily practice, or maybe just regular, whatever, how many times a week, or you come here often, that's also supportive for being mindful throughout the day, because it's kind of like maybe you're going to the gym, you know, in the morning, and then you work out for half an hour, and then during the day, you have the strength to actually, you know, lift the groceries and to maybe do some whatever project, or to walk to your car, or you know, whatever simple it is. And so you strengthen your mindfulness muscle on the cushion, and then you use it and strengthen it further out in your life. And then I'm going to end with a quote from Sayadaw. "Everything you need for understanding to arise is surrounding you in this moment. It is all on your doorstep. Family, friends, work, colleagues, and any other relationship you may have can all be powerful catalysts to your work of revealing wisdom." And so that's often what happens, right? In relationship, that's where the difficulty happens. That's where we can be mindful of these reactions in the mind.